page 118. Freudian theory and the pattern of fascist propaganda. Footnote 1, text, by Theodore W. Adorno. Written in 1951, this essay systematizes the author's extensive work in the 1940s, informed by psychoanalysis and the mass psychological base of fascism. It is important for us because it asks for the social psychological conditions of the possibility and also of the limits of modern authoritarian states. The essay further demonstrates the interrelationship of the Frankfurt critique of mass culture and the Institute's fascism theory. Adorno was to call both the culture industry and fascist propaganda psychoanalysis in reverse. During the past decade, the nature and content of the speeches and pamphlets of American fascist agitators have been subjected to intensive research by social scientists. Some of these studies, undertaken along the lines of content analysis, have finally led to a comprehensive presentation in the book Prophets of Deceit, by L. Löwenthal and N. Gutermann. Footnote 2, text. The overall picture contains a characterized by two main features. First, with the exception of some bizarre and completely negative recommendations to put aliens into concentration camps or to expatriate Zionists, fascist propaganda material in this country is little concerned with concrete and tangible political issues. The overwhelming majority of all agitators' statements are directed ad hominem. They are obviously based on psychological calculations rather than on the intention to gain followers through the rational statement of rational aims. Page 119. Text. The term rabble-rouser, though objectionable because of its inherent contempt of the masses as such, is adequate insofar as it expresses the atmosphere of irrational, emotional aggressiveness purposely promoted by our would-be Hitlers. If it is an impudence to call people rabble, it is precisely the aim of the agitator to transform the very people into rabble, that is, crowds, bent to violent action without any sensible political aim and to create the atmosphere of the pogrom. The universal purpose of these agitators is to instigate methodically what, since Gustave Le Bon's famous book, is commonly known as the psychology of the masses. Since the agitators approach is truly systematical and follows a rigidly set pattern of clear-cut devices. This does not merely pertain to the ultimate unity of the political purpose, the abolition of democracy through mass support against the democratic principle, but even more so to the intrinsic nature of the content and presentation of propaganda itself. The similarity of the utterances of various agitators from much publicized figures such as Coughlin and Gerald Smith to provincial small-time hate-mongers, it is so great that it suffices in principle to analyze the statements of one of them in order to know them all. Footnote 3, text. Moreover, the speeches themselves are so monotonous that one meets with endless repetitions as soon as one is acquainted with the very limited number of stock devices. As a matter of fact, constant reiteration and scarcity of ideas are indispensable ingredients of the entire technique. While the mechanical rigidity of the pattern is obvious in itself the expression of certain psychological aspects of fascist mentality, one cannot help feeling that propaganda material of the fascist brand forms a structural unit with a total common conception, be it conscious or unconscious, which determines every word that it is said. This structural unit seems to refer to the implicit political conception as well as to the psychological essence. So far, only the detached and, in a way, isolated nature of each device has been given scientific attention. The psychoanalytic connotations of the devices have been stressed and elaborated. Now that the elements have been cleared up sufficiently, the time has come to focus attention on the psychological system as such, and it may not be entirely accidental that the term summons the association of paranoia, which comprises and begets these elements. This theme to be the more appropriate, since otherwise the psychoanalytic interpretation of the individual devices will remain somewhat haphazard and arbitrary. A kind of theoretical frame of references will have to be evolved. Page 120. Inasmuch as the individual devices call almost irresistibly for psychoanalytic interpretation, it is but logical to postulate that this frame of reference should consist of the application of a more comprehensive basic psychoanalytic theory to the agitator's overall approach. Such a frame of reference has been provided by Freud himself in his book Group Psychology and the Analysis of the Ego, published in English as early as 1922 and long before the danger of German fascism appeared to be acute. Footnote 4, text. It is not an overstatement if we say that Freud, though he was hardly interested in the political phase of the problem, clearly foresaw the rise and nature of fascist mass movement in purely psychological categories. It is true that the analyst's unconscious perceives the unconscious of the patient. One may also presume that the theoretical institutions are capable of anticipating tendencies still latent on the rational level but manifesting themselves on a deeper one. It may not have been perchance that after the First World War, Freud turned his attention to narcissism and ego problems in the specific sense. The mechanisms and instinctual conflicts involved evidently play an increasingly important role in the present epoch. Whereas, according to the testimony of practicing analysts, the classical neuroses such as conversion hysteria, which served as models for the method, now occur less frequently than at the time of Freud's own development when Charcot dealt with hysteria clinically and Ibsen made it the subject matter of some of his plays. According to Freud, the problem of mass psychology is closely related to the new type of psychological affliction so characteristic of the era, which for socio-economic reasons witnesses the decline of the individual and his subsequent weakness. While Freud did not concern himself with the social changes, it may be said that he developed within the monadological confines of the individual the traces of its profound crises and willingness to yield unquestioning to powerful outside collective agencies. Without ever devoting himself to the study of contemporary social developments, Freud has pointed to historical trends through the development of his own work, the choice of his subject matters, and the evolution of guiding concepts. The method of Freud's book constitutes a dynamic interpretation of Le Bon's description of the mass mind and a critique of a few dogmatic concepts, magic words as it were, which are employed by Le Bon and other pre-analytic psychologists as though they were key for some startling phenomena. Foremost among these concepts is that of suggestion, which, incidentally, still plays a large role as a stopgap in popular thinking about the spell exercised by Hitler and his likes over the masses. Page 121. Freud does not challenge the accuracy of Le Bon's well-known characterizations of masses as being largely de-individualized, irrational, easily influenced, prone to violent action, and altogether a regressive nature. What distinguishes him from Le Bon's is rather the absence of the traditional contempt for the masses, which is the thema probandum of most of the older psychologists. Instead of inferring from the usual descriptive findings that the masses are inferior per se and likely to remain so, he asks in the spirit of true enlightenment, what makes the masses into masses? He rejects the easy hypothesis of a social or herd instinct, which for him denotes the problem and not its solution. In addition to the purely psychological reasons he gives for the rejection, one might say that he is on safe ground also from the sociological point of view. The straightforward comparison of modern mass formations with biological phenomena can hardly be regarded as valid, since the members of the contemporary masses are at least prima facie individuals, the children of a liberal, competitive, and individualistic society, and conditioned to maintain themselves as independent, self-sustaining units. They are continuously admonished to be rugged and warned against surrender. Even if one were to assume that archaic pre-individual instincts survive, one could not simply point to this inheritance, but would have to explain why modern men revert to patterns of behavior which flagrantly contradict their own rational level and the present stage of enlightened technological civilization. This is precisely what Freud wants to do. He tries to find out which psychological forces result in the transformation of individuals into a mass. If the individuals in the group are combined into a unity, there must surely be something to unite them. And this bond might be precisely the thing that is characteristic of a group. Footnote 5. Text. This quest, however, is tantamount to an exposition of the fundamental issue of fascist manipulation. For the fascist demagogue, who has to win the support of millions of people for aims largely incompatible with their own rational self-interest, can do so only by artificially creating the bond Freud is looking for. If the demagogue's approach is at all realistic, and their popular success leaves no doubt that it is, it might be hypothesized that the bond of question is the very same the demagogue tries to produce synthetically. In fact, that it is the unifying principle behind his various devices. In accordance with general psychoanalytic theory, Freud believes that the bond which integrates individuals into a mass is of a libidinal nature. Earlier psychologists have occasionally hit upon this aspect of mass psychology. Page 122. In MacDougall's opinion, men's emotions are stirred in a group to a pitch that they seldom or never attain under other conditions, and it is a pleasurable experience for those who are concerned to surrender themselves so unreservedly to their passions and thus to become merged in the group and to lose the sense of the limits of their individuality. Footnote 6. Text. Freud goes beyond such observations by explaining the coherence of masses altogether in terms of the pleasure principle, that is to say, the actual or vicarious gratifications individuals obtain from surrendering to a mass. Hitler, by the way, was well aware of the libidinal source of mass formation through surrender when he